You made a hole in one. There's a BMW on the tee box, and they try and tell you you don't get the car. And we are back for another Park Train, guys. This is a good one. I'm one of your co-hosts, Evan Singer,
and I'm your other co-host, Matt Sermon. How we doing, guys?
Thanks for joining us, guys. If you're new, the Park Train is all about using golf as a platform to help you live a better life, or at least make it a little less frustrating than the game of golf can be. Learn how to get better and achieve peak performance on and off the course from PGA Tour pros like we had today, best-selling authors, CEOs, coaches, and many more. We'll get to our conversation with Chris Nagel, Tour Pro on the Korn Ferry Tour right now, has played on the PGA Tour as well, in a second. But let's start with a word from our good friends at Superspeed.
Yes.
Matt, I know this is something that you have put a lot of focus into because, you know, the guy shoots low scores, but you don't really hit it that far as the average guy. So maybe you can talk about, you know, the importance of distance for you and how Superspeed Golf could help you.
Well, Superspeed Golf has changed the game for me. You know,
okay.
I mean, it's made me even a better player. I don't think you can ever actually will ever be able to catch me because I'm hitting it farther now. Right. You know, I've got launch. I never had launch before.
Oh, you have launch now.
I have launch. Yeah.
Okay. Never heard you say it like that, but okay. The guy's got launch.
Yeah.
All right. Go on.
Well, I mean, let's be honest with you. I mean, who wants the need for speed? You know, this is proven stuff. Right. So,
I mean, since 2014, Matt, Superspeed Golf has been at the forefront of training distance by providing simple, easy, and effective ways to increase clubhead speed for all players, even you, right?
Yeah,
based on scientifically proven concept of what they call overspeed training. And so each Superspeed set comes with three specifically weighted clubs, all designed around the weight of your driver. And by following the online protocols, they've got good videos to help you understand how to do it, you'll see a substantial, not a little increase, a substantial increase in club head speed. And each session lasts 8 to 10 minutes. You do it 3 times a week.
It's great.
So it's super easy. The other thing that we haven't said is that's the main Superspeed system. There's also a Superspeed C that's less than $100. So that's also an option for you guys if you want to kind of dip your toe into the system. So, you know, if Matt's distance gains aren't a good enough validator for you, Superspeed also has more than 700 tour pros and thousands of golfers around the world that use this. So if you want to get started and start hitting the ball longer, visit superspeedgolf.com and enter the code PARTRAIN, all one word, for 10% off your purchase.
Right.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm chomping at the bit here, Evan, because my first session, I picked up a couple miles per hour in my swing. And as we discussed with our guest tour player, Chris Nagel, the more fairways you hit, the longer you hit. I hit those speed slots. Mm. You know, you're hitting it high and far, but really at the end of the day, we're hitting it about the same because my balls actually run out or your balls just kind of plug right in the rough.
So it is a great
super speed is really helped there. And just wanted to give that context for our listeners.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's actually a really good point and something that really stood out from what Chris said is people don't talk about how when you start hitting more fairways, your ball is going to go farther, right? And so
point in case.
I mean,
thanks to Superspeed.
Chris Nagel is, I think, I was really excited to talk with him because I think he's a story that a lot of people can relate to, right? He's a +8 handicap, right? And people wonder like, how could a +8 not be like tearing it up on the PGA Tour regularly, right? But there's so many unbelievable players, and Chris is one of them, right? And so he's been on the Korn Ferry Tours. He's been through the grind of the mini tours for years. And in 2018, made the cut at Shinnecock Hills in the 2018 U.S. Open. And we talk a lot about, you know, his evolution, the journey, how he plays his best golf, you know, the trends that you guys can maybe pick up on. What are some patterns that helps him play his best versus not? Common mistakes amateurs make versus pros. We get into a lot of interesting things, not to mention it was really interesting when we asked him we gave him a long list of players and we asked him, what do they all have in common? He didn't know that I was just reading off players of, that he beat in the US Open. Yeah. So it's really interesting. It's funny to see his reaction to that.
Yeah, I mean, he's been out playing the mini tours for 15 years, you know, and but you know, he's been playing a lot of Korn Ferry events. So he's continued to improve, but it takes years for these guys. And you know, I think people need to understand, like our listeners, you know, there are so many unbelievable players in this world. And you might not even know who they are because
yeah,
you know, their fate can be changed overnight. One big tournament, one big cut. So I thought it was a great conversation and a look in. And look, next year you might see him on the tour. He's that good. +8 handicap. Well, shot 63-65 a couple months ago.
And yeah, he won a few months ago, Iowa. Wait,
I mean, 63-65, guys.
Yeah, he says something a lot about how to be aggressive and conservative at the same time that I think will really help you. And not to mention, you know, what he's saying about how his driver is getting straighter. I wouldn't be surprised with his length and the fact that he's such a good putter and chipper that a lot of people are going to know his name. As soon as next year.
Sure, hoping so.
All right. Well, thanks for joining, guys. If you don't follow us on the socials, follow us at the Par Train on all the channels and give us a review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for listening. As always, we will see you guys next Sunday.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. Chris, you know, we were just talking off air. You know, our sermonized mutual best friend, Ryan Winehouse, is a good friend of yours. You guys play golf together all the time. Your home club is his home club. And, you know, I just wanted to start the show by getting something off of our chest. Matt and I, you know, we're used to Ryan telling people how great we are, right? It happens a lot. But, you know, I will say over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years, Ryan talks a lot more about how great Chris Nagel is. And I just wanted you to know that we're okay with it. There's no jealousy. We're okay with it.
I'm surprised he talks so highly of me. Because he, you know, I give him shots and he beats my brain in every time we play. So,
well, we'll talk about that. Giving a scratch golfer eight shots.
We'll get into that in a few.
Yeah, that's something I think everybody wants to hear. But I wanted to start you off with something fun, Chris, because I think, you know, a lot of people know how many good golfers are out there, but a lot of people don't understand what separates certain kinds of players. And so we're going to go through a quick game here where I'm going to list a couple handicap ranges. And I want you to say or try to say in a few words what you think separates the two. So what do you think separates a 15 handicap to a 10? Let's start there.
15 to 10, probably chipping and putting.
Okay. How about a 9 to a 5?
9 to a 5, probably is length.
Oh, interesting. Yep. Okay. How about a 5 to a scratch?
5 to a scratch. To be honest, it's probably the tees they play.
And a scratch to a +5?
The mental side of golf. You know, not hitting a driver off a tee because you don't want to reach bunkers. Like more of like strategic, you know, thinking their way around the golf course a little bit better than, you know, a guy that just rips driver on every hole.
So that's why our buddy Ryan will never be better than a scratch is what you're saying.
Hey, you guys said it, not me.
I think Ryan's been plus two or three before. I've been tough on him.
Okay, last one, Chris. A +5 to a tour pro.
Every aspect of the game is just, you know, a fraction better than the 0 to a +5.
Got it. Okay.
Not by much, though.
Yeah, I mean, what that tells me, though, Chris, is that you would think there'd be huge gains and gaps between these, but they're really not that big, right? It's a couple less penalty shots here, a couple more made putts. Better mental game around the course management, suddenly you go from a 5 to a scratch, right? Where a lot of people see scratch as like this really tough place to get to.
Exactly. I always tell people, they ask me what separates, you know, guys each week and I say, well, if you look at it this way, if you and I are playing and we hit the exact same shots and we play the exact same way, but you make one more 15 footer than me each day, you beat me by four shots. And that's only, that's one 15 footer.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between like 10th and 35th.
Right. I remember Adam Long told us that a few weeks ago, right, Serm? He said he missed out on the, I think it was the FedEx Cup playoffs by one shot to Billy Horschel. And he says now that is a great way to keep him focused throughout the week, even if it's a 35th, right? Because he knows that one shot could mean the difference down the road.
Absolutely. 100%.
Well, Chris, obviously we talk about our buddy Ryan Winehouse, and Ryan's a great player, but you guys are playing a money game together and you give him shots, right? So one, is he taking them? I want to know if he's taking those shots. But two, like, what's it like when you play with a lot of great players and you're giving them shots, but at the end of the day, you're playing for money. You're always looking to get better, you're getting the juices flowing. So
yeah, he's taking them and it's criminal. Let me tell you, I don't mind giving all the shots because it gets me, my juices flowing. It gets me like, okay, I'm going to have to play great to beat this guy. You know, not necessarily Ryan, but anybody I'm giving shots to, I have to play great to beat him. And it's a challenge. If I go out, I'm just kind of playing and, you know, there's nothing on the line. I'm probably better off not being out there because I'm just kind of going through the motions. I need something on the line. I've played it like golf too long to where I have a hard time going out and just playing by myself. Like, that's not fun to me. I got to play with somebody for something. And at the end of the day, you know, if I lose $100, I'm fine with it. If I win $100, I'm fine with it. It's just, I got to have something on the line.
Oh, no doubt. And is it true that you have made more double eagles than hole in ones?
I have the same. I got four on each.
The same.
Oh, wow.
That's unbelievable. Yes.
Should double eagles get more credit?
I mean, you got to hit two really good shots to get it in a row.
And they're longer?
I don't know. That's a tough call, yeah. Okay, I started a tournament with a double eagle, so it could only go down from there.
Oh, my God.
Wow, I thought starting a tournament with a birdie was tough. That's real tough.
You just got to walk off the course after you make.
Yeah, we prefer starting on the par train, personally. Chris, I'm really fascinated about the weekly process. A lot of people know there's the Korn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour, but what Adam Long was starting to talk about a few weeks ago was he struggled with his biggest challenge was getting worried about getting opportunities. Every week he wasn't sure if he would make it into the field, right? And I just want people to try and understand what your weekly process is, right? How many events you have slated and that you're locked in for, how you find out if you're going to get in, the things you have to do to try and get in. Right. I just want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, like, I don't remember the year. It's probably 2012, 13, 14. I don't know. My first year that I had conditional on the Korn Ferry, which was the web.com there. Kind of the same way. I didn't know what events I was going to get into. I couldn't make a schedule. I couldn't set a schedule. So I kind of had a bag packed at all times because you could. You could know the Friday before the event, or you could know Wednesday of the event that you have you could find out at 5 o'clock on Wednesday that you got a 7:30 tee time on Thursday. Mm. And so you go to PGA Tour links and there's the alternate list and categories of how guys get in. So you kind of have like a sense. So if you're close, you might fly there. If you didn't do the Monday spotter. Having conditional is kind of no man's land. Do you go play like a mini tour event? Do you take the week off and prepare for maybe the following week, see if you can get in that one? Yeah, I mean, there's no guarantees in this game. You got to be prepared at all times, but then again, I don't know, you don't want to like over practice and, you know, peak before you can get in those events. It's an ever-changing game. I'm playing it. You never have the same shot twice, kind of thing. So it's kind of every week's different. Every week has its challenges.
Sure.
Yeah, it's just kind of it's all over the board. If you have guaranteed starts, like you know, you're a full member of the tour, you kind of set your schedule and you know, okay, I play good at this course. You know, this course is maybe super tight and short. I don't particularly play good at this course. So I'm going to take that week off and recharge the batteries.
Right.
Yeah, there's all kinds of, I mean, you could probably sit and talk just on this for about an hour.
I would guess the majority of people probably think and mostly assume that most guys are like Matthew Wolf, right? Where you graduate college and then boom, you start playing on the PGA Tour, right? It's interesting to maybe shed some light on the different ways. I mean, there's so many different ways, right? That someone can make it on the big tour.
Obviously you hear there's like one guy every year that does that. And that's about all you hear about. And yeah, that's, you know, few and far between. Everybody else has got to go through the Q school or play their way in, you know, get on a roll where they finish top 10s or 25s and accumulate enough points or dollars to gain access for the remainder of the year. But yeah, I mean, obviously Matthew Wolf's a special player, and, you know, it's kind of like Ricky Fowler and a couple of those guys kind of come out and, you know, make their mark kind of right away. But the majority, 99% of the guys have to, you know, grind it out, go through, you know, playing a mini tour for a year or two, and then Corn Ferry, and then maybe lose their status, and then back on Corn Ferry. And, there's so many different avenues. You see, like this year, Will Zalatoris, I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. He's having a banner year on the Corn Ferry Tour, and gets into a few of the regular tour events, plays well in the U.S. Open, gets them into, I think, opposite field event. And now I think he's like one top 30 away from getting conditional status for the remainder of, you know, this season coming up. So there's many different ways of doing it. It's hard. It can be done though.
Right. Chris, and you can be a hero overnight, right? Or, you know, whether it's a Monday shooter, right? Or you can go the other way too. A lot can change. And I think dealing with those kinds of emotions or those opportunities, right?
For sure. You always got to be prepared because you don't know when you're going to get that opportunity. But I always look at, I'm sure you guys are familiar with Ted Potter. He Mondayed into a Corn Ferry event and won, and then got his car through that. And then I don't know if he won like right away, but he was out on tour for a couple of years and won like the Greenbrier, and then
Pebble.
But, you know, not many. Yeah, he won a Pebble too.
Great shot on the last hole.
Yeah,
there's so many different ways of doing it, and people don't really, I guess, understand or hear about those stories. They just hear about, oh, Matthew Wolf, won the NCAA title. He's going to be a stalwart on the PGA Tour for the next 20 years. You know, those are the stories that people remember, but there's far more stories of, like, a Ted Potter.
Totally. And so help me understand, because I actually don't know, like, what allows Matthew Wolf to play right away? Is it all sponsor exemptions? Is it because of the NCAA win that got him an exemption? I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously he won the NCAA, so he's on people's radars. He's on, you know, he's got sponsorships that are going to come in right away, where a lot of guys, you know, they got to earn those throughout the year.
Sure.
Or years. And then he's probably got a really good agent that gets him in these, I think they can get like 7 unrestricted sponsor exemptions a year. So he'll get a few exemptions. And if he plays well in those events, you know, accumulates money, gains status through that. I can't remember. I think he won in like his third or fourth start. So he probably had like 6 exemptions lined up and then won before they were up. Kind of the same way Jordan Spieth did it. The year he won the John Deere, the previous year, he missed in second stage of Q school, so he didn't have any playing privileges anywhere, and then was playing on sponsor exemptions, and then, you know, wins and off to the races.
So what is your mindset then? Because I could see it going two ways, right? You could either go from the mindset of, this is really exciting because I just need a shot, right? I just need one really good week that can then propel me into another good week. And suddenly I've got conditional and then I can get full status or get a win and it propels me here. But then on the flip side, I would think that that would be really easy way to press, because now you're almost trying to make the most out of every opportunity and force it because there's so much opportunity with one top five or win. How do you balance that? What's your mindset week to week to make sure that you're loose, but you also know the stakes?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's so cliche, and you know, you just try to hit one shot at a time. Easier said than done. For me, I put myself in that situation before, so I feel like I can do it again. I've pressed. I've played loose when I had conditional and got, you know, status for the remainder of the year on the Corn Ferry. And then I've also, you know, kind of knew it was at stake and not choked it away, but kind of played tight and didn't get, like, this year in Chicago, I knew I need top 25 to get in the next week. And it was just off, you know, that last final round or whatever. I just knew everything wasn't there. It was off. I was playing tight. I didn't get in that top 25. So I've experienced both ways, I guess. But yeah, you just gotta keep your head down and just play golf. You know, it's hard not to think about the future, but it's right there in your, in the forefront.
For sure. Well, Chris, I mean, you've played some incredible golf over the years and being on the Corn Ferry Tour, playing in majors. And like you just kind of said, there's ups and downs like any career profession, but professional golf is certainly unique and you've been doing it a while. So talk about your support system, your family. I think, you know, encouraging you to keep, you know, going to Q school this past year, you know, because self-belief is so important, but a little assistance with it probably doesn't hurt, right?
My support system's huge. There have been times where, you know, I played the game long enough to where, like, man, am I, you know, obviously I haven't had full status on tour, and that's kind of the goal, is to get out there. I mean, you're not planning to just play mini tour events all your life. So there have been times where in the lows, just kind of thinking, well, maybe I should be, you know, going to insurance, or maybe I should, you know, be a financial planner. But you talk to your support system and they, you know, they kind of kick you in the tail and say, hey, look, you've done this. You're right. Close. Keep grinding. You know, if you hang it up, you might regret it. Or, I mean, the support system is huge. My wife's been awesome. She works out of the house and she's probably my biggest fan, to be honest. And when she tells me to go play, that just kind of, you know, reiterates, all right, I'm supposed to be playing golf. So
I read a quote where you said you were just kind of fed up with the whole deal, you know, the whole process. You went from quitting the game to where you hadn't had this much fun playing in probably 3 to 4 years. I think that was in the last few years you said that. So maybe talk us through where you were at, you know, when you thought maybe this is it, you know, maybe I should try something else versus what then. It sounds like support system was huge, but what helped you then say, you know what, I can do this, and you started having more fun than you had in years?
It came after like a whole bunch of like 40th finishes, you know, I'm playing okay, but I'm not getting anything out of my game. I'm putting a lot of work into it, but I'm not seeing results. It's just kind of like, man, this is tough. Like,
yeah,
obviously I love the game, but I feel like I'm working my tail off and I'm not getting anything out of it. And then I wasn't going to play the U.S. Open qualifying. And like 2 minutes before the deadline, I signed up. I was like, what the hell? I'll just do it. And, you know, I didn't even know if I got in or not. Like, I was waiting for the confirmation emails past deadline. I was like, well, if I get in, great. If I don't, you know, whatever. And then I got in and then I went and played the qualifier and I had a buddy looping and just kind of, I hadn't played like 2 weeks prior to that. So I just was kind of away from it. So that kind of, I think, helped recharge the batteries and just give a fresh perspective. And, you know, so I went out and I was kind of like, just play golf. Just who cares what happens, just play golf. I played great, got through locals. And then I'm driving home and I get a call from the Corn Ferry and they say, hey, you're in the BMW Pro-Am this week. do you want your spot? I was like, yeah, I'll go play. Whatever. I had fun today. I'll go play again. And I had fun playing in the BMW. Didn't play well. And then I got into Nashville the next week. And I, you know, kind of same thing. Just play golf. Who cares what happens? And I played well. I finished like seventh that week. That shuffled me in for the remainder of the year. And I kind of was like, I wasn't grinding. I wasn't, you know, at the course playing practice rounds like crazy, like, you know, like you feel like you need to be. And I was just showing up playing golf, and I started playing good. And I had a buddy caddy for me, like kind of from the U.S. Open going forward, or U.S. Open qualifying going forward. And we just had a good time out there. And it was kind of a different take or fresh perspective, rather than having like a professional caddy as opposed to your buddy, because your buddy, you know,
sure.
You know, I've known him for years, and we just had fun. I started playing better, and it was, you know, we were joking around and not taking it as serious, and started getting some results, and it's like, hey, this is fun. This is fun again.
Yeah.
Well, so that's kind of like where it all switched.
Yeah, Chris, I think that's fascinating. When you say, just go play golf, right? So like for our listeners, what does that mean to you? I think you just kind of alluded to it with laughing, joking with the attitude, but does that mean not being just way less attached to outcomes and results? Like, what does it mean to you when you say, just play golf? I'm just going to go play golf today.
Just go play golf. Go, like, if you see the hole going to the left, hit a draw. If you see it going to the right, hit a fade. Just go out and hit shots, and rather than,
yeah,
all right, is my swing okay? Am I in positions? Like, and that's one of the difference I see. I was joking with a buddy the other day. I just played this Sedona Open up in Sedona, obviously. And I, you know, there's obviously great players on the mini tours, but the big difference there I see is Webb and above, guys aren't messing with their swings during the round. Where in mini tour events, you see guys like just all they do is mess with their swing. And so they're not playing golf. They're playing golf swing. And yeah, just go out, play fun, you know, have fun. Played golf for how many years and practice for how many years? Now it's just time to go play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
It's so funny, Chris. Yeah. I mean, that reminds me of an interview we did with this Fluid Motion coach that coaches guys like Scott McCarron, and it's all about fluidity, right? And it's actually proven science that when your frontal cortex goes on, you're trying to do something with like surface level thoughts, you can't access the deep levels of your motion of your body that happens naturally, right? And so he calls it like abstract mind helps with fluid swings. And it sounds like you had a really abstract mind. It sounds like you were just kind of like letting it flow, right? Trying to have fun with it versus thinking, well, yeah, I got to get the club here or I can't miss there. You were just kind of letting it freewheel, right?
Here's the thing. If you shoot 70 and 80, like 70 or 80, I mean, no, it doesn't matter. Don't attach yourself to the results. You're still the same person off the golf course that you were, you know, the day before. I mean, it's just a game. And yeah, I think that allowed me to kind of, you know, be more free. And my wife tells me all the time, she's like, you're not your results. You're an individual. You're a person that, you know, is not attached to your golf.
Yep. I love that. Speaking of individuals, I'm going to read you a list of names and I want you to tell me what you think they all have in common. Okay. Jordan Spieth, Tiger Woods, Graham McDowell, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Matt Kuchar, John Rahm, Sergio Garcia. What do you think they all have in common?
You guys might disagree with me on this, but I think they're all great putters, even though people think Sergio is not a good putter.
Yeah,
he can putt
with his eyes closed. Well, that's yeah, probably true, Chris, but the answer that we're going to tell you is, you beat all of these guys in the 2018 U.S. Open at Shinnecock. What does that mean to you when you hear that list?
That just confirms that, you know, I can play out there. I can hang with those guys for sure. I mean, that's, you're playing on the hardest golf course that week against the best players in the world. You know, I played good enough to beat all those guys.
What did that feel when you were walking in? I just want to hear, because you've been doing this a long time. Right, Chris? And I know how hard you've worked. I've talked to Ryan over the years, and he's always, you know, singing your praises. And so, like, did that feel like a, oh my God, I'm here? Or is it, was it a lot of nerves? You know, what was going through your mind when you walked in?
When I walked in, I think I turned to Michael, my caddy, and I was like, this is pretty sweet. I played PGA Tour events before, and you see grandstands and stuff, but these grandstands were like on a, you know, three times the level of a regular tour event.
Right.
And to be honest, I kind of like finally, like I, to be honest, I thought I'd be a little further along than I am now. I thought I would have had a little bit more success, and I guess that's life, but yeah, I mean, it's just sweet when you step on property and you just, everything is just perfect and whatever you need is available to you. And you're like, all right, this is going to be a great week. It's going to be fun.
What is it about your game, Chris, that you feel that, you know, whether it separates you or just, you know, you can do that again, that you can beat all those top players in the world, or you can go win a Korn Ferry event. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your game in that sense.
I feel like I'm kind of the opposite of people are like, chipping and putting keeps, you know, guys from being successful on tour. Well, I feel like that's probably my strength. Like I have length, but I'm not necessarily the best like hitter of the golf ball. I'm not best, you know, I don't drive it the best or whatever, but I can chip and putt. I think that week at the Open, I was in the top 10 of chipping and putting. And I was like one of the last in fairways hit. So, you know, to make the cut in a US Open, driving it, you know, sideways was kind of fun, but, yeah, I chip and putt, I think, exceptionally well. I don't hit it as great as maybe, you know, like Sergio Garcia. I think he's a good putter, but he hits it so good that he gets himself so many chances.
Right.
So people are like, well, if he doesn't make every putt, you know, he's a bad putter, but he hits so many greens. So
sure.
He has a lot of chances.
I just want to hit on what you just said about you. I mean, you went into the week, right, first major with your buddy on the bag, and you said this is going to be a great week, right? I just want to talk about that mindset. Was that a different mindset than maybe, you know, a Korn Ferry event or an event you played before where you genuinely, it sounds like to me, you genuinely wanted to soak it in and really enjoy the week. And look what that led to. Right? You made the cut at a major and you beat that list of names I just read, including Tiger Woods.
Golf is a funny game. You don't know how many, you know, US Opens you're going to get to play in. So obviously I want to, you know, make the most of it and enjoy it. And I have my family out there with me. And my oldest son was three at the time. So, you know, I got them in town, and it's on Father's Day. So it's just like, you know, a special week.
That's cool. Yeah.
And obviously I want to play in many more majors, but you just don't know in this game. Like, nothing's guaranteed. So, yeah, I want to enjoy the week. But I also thought that even though, you know, I've never played on a US Open before, but I still thought I could compete and have a chance because I chip and putt it good, and the US Open is not about, you know, shooting 25 under. So the harder the golf course, the better it is for me. I mean, if you look at all my past results on, like, Korn Ferry events, I play the harder golf courses. That's where all my good finishes are.
Sure.
So I was like, this is going to be a good week. This golf course, you know, sets up for me.
Right.
So if I have fun, I will probably play well. I mean, there's no guarantee in that, but chances of me playing well when having fun are pretty good.
Yeah. And something you said at the beginning of the week was you're going to be super aggressive to conservative targets. The front third of the greens look good to me. Maybe I think this is actually a really interesting thing that a lot of amateurs could benefit from. What does super aggressive to conservative targets mean to you?
Yeah, like you're not necessarily hitting at every pin, but your target that you pick, I mean, you want to hit that target. Even if you have a, you know, sand wedge in your hand, you're playing 20 feet left or right of a hole, you still gotta, like, you know, bear down and pay attention to what you're doing, because if you just let up for a second and, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to kind of whiff it out there to the right, well, that whiff's going to not end up in a great spot. So you got to be aggressive. You got to, you know, make sure you have some purpose behind the shot.
Well, right, Chris. And being aggressive takes moxie, right? It takes confidence. Sometimes you can be a little afraid to be aggressive. So managing that, right, around big targets or conservative targets is the way to do that, right, to free up your mind, because you've got to make swings that, you know, like you said, have purpose.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're laying up on a par five, like a lot of people, they just grab their six iron and they just kind of hit it down there. Well, a lot of times they hit it in the rough because they're not paying attention to what they're doing.
Sure.
You know, and when you lay up, you got to lay it up in the fairway. Like there's a,
it's the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah, right. It's not a good feeling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you take one shot off and it can cost you.
But I think that's really important. To me, not a lot of people talk about that, because just because you're aiming at the fat part of a green or the middle of the green, or you're hitting a hybrid off of a tee or a, you know, a fairway wood instead of a driver, that doesn't mean that you're not going after it, right? You know, I think a lot of people associate conservative play with
laying back,
kind of guiding it. Where I think this concept, I'm going to take it in my own game. I think, you know, going back to our conversation around like what separates these handicaps, I bet you that if someone played aggressively to conservative targets, I bet you a lot of nines could get to a five.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Heard it there first. I think a lot of them just don't know. Like, you know, they're like, oh, golf, you got to hit every pin to make birdies. No, you don't. If a pin's on the right and you hit it 15 to 20 feet left, you know, to all the right pins and vice versa to all the left pins, you always have a putt at it. Rather than, you know, if you miss right and you get a chip, like you're not gonna make many chips, but you can make some putts. Like it's just a chess game.
I'm interested, really, you know, what you're feeling out there and when you're playing your best golf. In terms of, you know, is there one key physical thought that you like to bring with you or really sticks out when you're playing well? And is there one key mental thought that really stays with you and then kind of makes you unique? I'm curious because I always had that, or when I was playing my best golf in college, I kind of think about that now and try to go back to it. But I'm curious.
I'm not like a Bubba Watson. You know, I don't curve the ball like him. When I'm playing my best, I'm curving the ball one way or the other on every single shot. When I start trying to hit it straight, it's kind of when I get a little off.
Sure.
But if, you know, if I'm trying to curve it a little right to left or left to right, kind of like in the process, all right, what do I need to do to make this ball start at that tree and kind of curve over to this bunker kind of thing. That's when I'm playing my best. And that kind of goes back to, I'm not getting mechanical with my swing. I'm just trying to tell myself, all right, I need to just slide this ball a little bit here and there.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a feel game, even though it's mechanical, it's your feel is going to outweigh your mechanics if you can get it going that way. But like a swing thought that I've used all year this year is I try to keep my back to the target just a touch longer, a little more patient. Mm-hmm. That way I don't kind of come up out of the shot, and it's been good this year. So I've rode that all year long.
It kind of helps just wait on it so you can actually be aggressive, right?
Hit it from the inside.
Right, you know. You don't wait on it. You can try to be aggressive, but it's going to go away. So you don't want to, you know, right?
Right.
You're certainly high, right? Well, but you know, as we kind of talk about how you, when you're dialed in, like Chris, I think you won the Iowa Open a few months ago.
Yes.
And you blitz. I mean, you really blitz the field, 63, 65. And Chris, talk about that. I think that was in early August. It's very common, you know, for all players, especially, you know, even good players to shoot a great round, but not back it up. Sometimes go completely the other way. So you fire 63. What was your mindset like on the range that next morning? And you found a way to continue to play loose and free and fire a 65.
Yeah. Golf's weird. You know, one day you feel like you're on top of the world. Next day you're like, I'm quitting because I feel like I've never played the game. It's just,
you're right.
You know, there's so many different factors. Like you could sleep weird and your body doesn't loosen up you know, whatnot. But like for me that week, I just drove it good. I mean, I feel like the driver is just as important as a putter now. Like a driver is a scoring club. Because if you hit it in play, it sets up the whole entire hole. Like it is a scoring club. I just drove it great in Iowa. And the course was long and hard. It was, 7,400 yards is right up my alley. Like I said, it's harder to golf course. And I drove well, therefore, I had shorter clubs into holes than most guys. And I putted good. I feel like I said before, I think chipping and putting is good, is one of my strong suits. So I putted good. And I wasn't like, it's kind of what we just talked about, the aggressiveness. I never really hit it flags. I just always kind of hit it on the fat side of it, whether it was 5 feet to the fat side or 20 feet to the fat side. Because I feel like I'm a good enough putter to where I'm going to make a bunch of putts. So I don't need to hit it, 3 feet to make birdies.
Mm. Love it.
So I just drove it good and made some
made a lot of birdies.
Yeah, right.
Well, great segue, Chris. I mean, speaking of driving, we were looking at your stats because Ryan's talked a lot about this. Ryan's known for winning back-to-back long drive contest at the Meadowbrook member guest, and you're driving it 30 yards past him every round. So in 2013 you averaged 289 off the tee, 2015 299, 2016 310. I mean,
we think you're like at 307 this past year, so yeah.
So are you working with our sponsor Superspeed Golf right now, or what's going on?
I need to get a couple of those sticks for sure.
We could help you with that.
Absolutely. Well, I think here's what a lot of people don't, I guess, realize. So I got longer, obviously, as the years went on. But as the years went on, I made more cuts. And so what happens is by the weekend, the course is a lot drier.
Yeah.
So, you're on Thursday, you're hitting it. 300 off the tee, but by Sunday when it's dry, you're hitting it 340. But I wasn't playing the weekends early in my career, so I wasn't getting those long drives on Saturday and Sunday. But I think a lot of it is, the equipment's changed for sure.
Right.
And if you hit fairways, they go farther. If you hit rough, it doesn't really roll. So I'm a little straighter now. Okay. And yeah, I've worked out over the years and I've gotten stronger. So, my driver is year after year is getting more accurate and I guess a little bit longer. So that's
a good thing.
One aspect I've tried to work on, cause it does set up your scoring clubs and in the holes. So yeah, driving's super important.
But straighter means longer, I think you just said, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. Not many people talk about that. Obviously, if you hit fairways, your drives are going to go longer.
Yeah. And now this, all the stats they've done over the years is like length is everything. Guys don't want 8-iron, 7-iron out of the fairway. They want, wedge from the rough. Mm-hmm. It makes it easier.
Yeah, don't tell that to Cermak. That'll trigger him. But go ahead, Cermak.
Evan likes to hit it long, but I like to shoot low.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
It's funny because Chris, we're talking to you kind of really about your game, what you see out of the, when you're playing out of the tour. But you play with a lot of a lot of our listeners are amateur players and 15, 20 handicaps, single, all across the board, and everybody's trying to get better. So when you play in these pro-ams or when you go play with, the guys at Meadowbrook and that are just average golfers, when they ask you for advice, what mistakes, are you kind of seeing and how do you give them, some love around the mental game or is it the, focus on your driver? Like, tell us what sticks out for you, what you see and what advice you're giving more people than not.
Yeah, I've seen it all in the program. Yeah, I love them all. The slice is obviously like the big thing. And the tip I told you guys that I've been kind of running with all year, would keep my back to the target a little bit longer is, I guess that could help them get it more from the inside. They got that whole over the top, open up the shoulders, cut across it, you know, send it into the Smith's pool. it's hard to give people advice because if it doesn't work in two swings, they like abandon it. And it's something that needs to probably be done. You know, they need to hit 50 balls in the range and then they would kind of grasp the concept of it. But on the course, I try not to, you know, tell them too much. Another thing I see, I think is funny, is when we get on the greens, they don't play greens that are that fast normally. And so they, you know, they're rocketing them by, you know, you have like 10 feet for birdie or par or whatever. Right. And they're like, give me a read. And I say, oh, it's a, you know, a cup out right. And then they go and they blast it 15 feet by and they're like, oh, it didn't move. I'm like, well, yeah, you ever seen a train turn left, like going 100 miles an hour? It doesn't
not
happen.
The bar train.
They look at you like, yeah. They look at you like, you know, I'm crazy.
You're nuts, right? Trust me.
Yeah. yeah, I've seen it all. The main thing is I tell people, I'm like, just have fun. Because I see a lot of people out there, and they don't hit it the way they want to, and they get frustrated and mad. And I'm like, well, dude, you're out here on a great golf course. The weather's great. You know, you're out with buddies. Just have fun. I don't care if you shoot 70 or if you shoot 105. Just have a good time. That's what it's all about anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Adam Long said overreacting. All the amateurs overreact. Oh. Pros underreact.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
These St. Louis guys, I tell you.
Yeah, the St. Louis guys are really the top notch. But, Chris, we're gonna end you on this one, and then we'll get you out of here. I really wanted to talk about this. The Portland Open, hopefully I got this right. You made a hole-in-one. There's a BMW on the tee box, and they try and tell you don't get the car. And then you finally get a car. It's not the car on the tee box, but you get a 2-year lease. I'm sure it was nice to get a free car for 2 years, but you only get a lease? Come on, give the guy a car.
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously I'm playing loose in Portland. I got nothing to lose, right? So I'm playing loose. The hole before, I just pitched in for eagle. And then I make the hole in one on the 12th hole, which is this sweet little par three, like 158 yards, you know, make this one. And part of me is like, you know, go wild, go crazy. There's a beer garden to the right of the hole. I'm like, maybe I should go over there and buy beers, you know, like what?
Yeah.
but then I'm like, well, I'm in this tournament now, so I got to kind of focus and stuff. So, but yeah, I made the hole in one, got a little excited, not, you know, tried to not overdo it. And then, you know, I looked to the marshal. I said, hey, man, that's my car. You want to get that thing on a rig for me and haul it back to St. Louis? And so I go up and get the ball. And there's actually a lady behind the green. And she works for BMW. And she's like, oh, congratulations. I work for BMW. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. I can't wait to drive the car. And she's like, oh, you don't get the car. And so I'm like, whatever.
Excuse me?
I got a tournament to play. So we finished the tournament or whatever, and I start getting all these tweets and texts, congrats on the car, yada, yada, yada. And so I learned through the officials that it was just a whole sponsor, you know, it wasn't a prize. And so, you know, I just send out a tweet, hey, thanks, but I didn't get the car. And so I get some people, you know, tweeting, hey, you should get the car. I get a bunch of texts. And I know a gentleman in St. Louis that works for BMW, and he called, you know, the headquarters or whoever he needed to call and got kind of worked out. But yeah, the car would have been nice to keep. But yeah, free car for 2 years isn't bad either, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I would take that. It's just, you know, someone makes an ace, give them the car. I think that's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, I've never played a tournament where a car sitting on tee is not the prize.
Right.
Neither have I. And
it's kind of, I don't know.
I'm glad that, yeah.
An unwritten rule.
Yeah, for sure.
It is. Well, Chris, it's been awesome talking with you. Where are we going to be looking out for you, seeing you these next few months? What's your schedule looking like? For 2021, for the end of 2020, where can we follow you?
So I got a Twitter handle at C Nagel. I'm not like a huge social media guy. I put stuff out occasionally. And then Instagram is Right Rough, because I tend to hit it just a little bit in the right rough. so, I own my kind of flaw there. Yeah. So those are my social media outlets. I don't have Facebook. Sorry. But I'm not going to play a ton coming up. I'm going to do the Monday qualifier for Houston, the Monday qualifier for the RSM. And there's not much really going on this fall with, the whole COVID stuff going.
Sure.
And then hopefully January pick it up. I'm going to play the big money event. I won the APT Tour event in Manhattan, Kansas, which got me an exemption into this big money event down in Florida after the first year. It's like 100 grand a first. And yeah, these guys putting on just one event with a big purse. So got into that.
Love it.
But yeah, I mean, just try to, spend some time with the family this fall and try to get better and try to, carry it. What this season, I've had a good season, even though I haven't played much this year, I've had a good season. So try to carry that into next year and do some damage.
Well, here's what we'll do. Next spring, Evan and I will come to St. Louis, and Evan can be on your team, and Ryan and I will team up, and we're going to take you guys on, okay?
Okay.
Well, I think I should get Rhino since he gets, too many shots.
Okay, yeah.
How about you two and I take on Ryan since he gets too many shots?
I mean, that could work too.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't mind teaming up and, I'm a seven. So you want to talk about getting shots. I mean, I would get a lot.
Evan, you actually can't play in the match.
Partner, let's do this, partner. You're getting 15. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm in.
Let's go.
I'm in. Can drop it 340 at times. We'll make a good match.
At times. This is fun.
All right, Chris. Well, this was a blast. I'm so glad you could come on, and we always were rooting for you, but we're continuing to root for you. And hey, just go out there and keep playing free, right? It works for you.
That's right. Yeah. No, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's great talking with y'all. And let's get that match set up.
I'm in. All right, take care, Chris.
See you, Chris.
All right, see you guys.
All right.